Last year, a Basquiat painting came up for auction. It had not been seen publicly since its initial unveiling in 1982, and it sparked a riveting bidding war.
Ladies and gentlemen, a masterpiece by Jean-Michel Basquiat, and I'm going to start the bidding here at $57 million. $57 million. $58 million now. $58 million. $59 million now. $60 million. Thank you. So Yuki's bidder at $68 million. And I can sell at $68 million. Patty, you want a bid? Sure. So over on this side of the room, it's Yuki's bidder at $68 million. And I'm going to sell it. Fair warning now. Last chance. Is that a bid, sir? $69 million. New bidder. Yuki, can we make it a rounder number?
And after that, the bidding really took off, and it ended up at $98 million, which, if you count all the fees involved, means that the buyer paid $110 million, the most expensive American artwork ever sold, smashing the old record, which was also a Basquiat, bought by the same collector. So, with me to talk about the expensive mystique of Jean-Michel Basquiat, because this painting is coming to Seattle, we have KOW Arts reporter Marcy Stillman.
Hello.
Stillman, still with us.
I'm still here. Yep.
And also, Margot Von Singel is visual arts critic for City Arts. Welcome, Margot.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Margot, how did this sell for so much? Tell us that story.
Well, it was actually, you know, estimated at $60 million. Mm. And there was another bidder that came in really late in the game, which is what you kind of heard. There was a silence. He was like, oh, I hope there's another bidder. And that's what happened. There were just two people who really wanted it. And it just, you know, went really fast after that.
Why is a Basquiat so expensive, so valued?
Well, it was valued, you know, at around like 50 or 60, like his other works or not. And so the question is why for, you know, auction records is really hard because it's not an exact science. It's somebody has to want it and has to, you know, want to pay that money. And that's kind of why it's so expensive. But I think the most important thing to know is that Basquiat is kind of like a mythical figure. And I think that's the interesting thing that...
And it's also that there aren't very many Basquiats.
Yes, there, you know, there's not a lot of supply. He lived only to be 27. So there's not a lot of supply, and specifically not for the works that are valued most and that considered, you know, his best work, which is from 81 until 83. This is like right from the middle, from 82. And this is also from his breakout year. So it's kind of like a, you know, seminal work, which is why it also made so much
money.
Notice we've been talking about scarcity and mystique and haven't mentioned what the painting looks like. Does anyone want to take a whack at that?
I'll take a whack at that. It's large. I'm not good at dimensions. But essentially, it's a black outline of a skull on top of colors. There's some lettering. It's very bright behind this black skull. It's large. It's probably at least 7 feet tall.
I think it's 6 feet tall.
Yeah, it's big and it's very vivid. And the skull is large and down in the, I guess as you look at it, the lower right hand corner, there's lettering. There's a lot of interpretations. It could be about the black experience in America. It could be about Basquiat's own experience as a Haitian American youth. I mean, that's up to the viewer.
It is up to the viewer. Just one critic, I'll quote, said, "A black skull scarred with red rivulets, pitted with angry eyes, gnashing its teeth against a blue graffiti wall on which someone has been doing their sums. Perhaps the street mathematician was calculating how many Africans died on slave ships in the 18th century, or how many people lived in slavery in America, or how many young black men have been killed by police guns in the last few years."
Wow, yeah.
The interpretation. So this painting, as we said, if you've just tuned in, the price got pushed up in this auction to about $100 million. And Margot, we know who the buyer was. Isn't that unusual?
Well, it's not unusual to know, but it's unusual to know it so fast.
Uh-huh.
So usually when somebody, you know, buys a work that has shattered a record, there's like, you know, the days after in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, everyone's like, who is it? And there's a lot of, you know, talk in the art world. And now he kind of, you know, it's a Japanese businessman, and he just announced it on his own Instagram and on Twitter. And
well, why is it usually a secret? And do we know why this person just came out with it?
The art world is pretty secretive in general, and collectors are not always trying to immediately tell how much, you know, they spend on an artwork. And he's very different. He's kind of really open about his collection, how he, you know, talks to artists, meets them. It's part of his lifestyle, I would say.
He's also building a museum, I believe, in his hometown of Chiba, Japan. He's kind of got a fashion empire. He's a tech entrepreneur. And I think he sees this as part of like a hip identity. I mean, I don't know him, but that's what it seems like.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, the fact that he's showing pictures on his Instagram of like himself in front of a Rothko painting, and he's like wearing a Marc Jacobs or like, you know, big fashion brands. And it's definitely part of his lifestyle, like art and fashion and all those things are part of it. And he likes to show that.
Mm.
And the painting is coming to the Seattle Art Museum March 21st. What do you think, the two of you, that think it'll feel like to be at SAM and be with that painting?
I find it really interesting because there's some amazing paintings there right now that are part of a bigger show, not just one painting. I think this is going to be shown in opposition to a painting that's in Sam's collection that is. So I don't actually know how it's going to be. I'm excited to see it in person, but I don't think it's going to feel any different than it feels to me to have seen the Kehinde Wileys at the Art Museum or the Colescott Marshall paintings that are up there now.
Well, I think it'll have its own kind of room. It'll be with the Warhol painting, I think, which is interesting because he was his mentor, but now he kind of surpassed him on the auction market, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll have a lot of room to kind of dominate the room, and I think that's, you know, the perfect experience for it.
Do you think you'll feel differently, Marco, about seeing this than you do about seeing other epic work?
No, I don't think so. I think there's an aura around, you know, work that has sold for so much, but when you're standing in front of it, you're looking at what this artist did and how he changed, you know, the course of art history. And I think that's still the most important thing when you'll see it. I think you'll feel that.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing story that this man changed the course of art history. And you mentioned him surpassing his mentor. And, you know, he's the king of the capitalist hill. And it's, you know, he came from so little and immigrant parents. Wow.
But he also thought a lot of himself. He had a very healthy self-image. And imagine if you see some of those early paintings, Margot mentioned the years that were his best years. Those are years before he was a heroin addict. And he often painted himself with crowns in opposition to crown figures. And so there's a lot of supposition that that he saw himself as this path to a more kingly being. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I think it's a nice thing to think about when you look at those paintings. We'll only be seeing this one. It would be awesome to see a whole show, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, that would be. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, paintings of his in L.A., so on the West Coast in New York, but not really in Seattle. They haven't been shown as much. So it's a great opportunity to see at least one. And we would wish there would be more.
Yes,
here in Seattle.
And there's a tragic irony involved in him being crowned the capitalist king and all the social critiques that he was making along the way. I wonder, Margot, you're from Belgium originally and work by old masters as part of a European identity. Do you think this piece is important for people in Seattle in any way?
I think it's important because he was an artist that did not get immediate, like a ton of success in his early years. And I think it could show to a lot of younger people that, you know, there is value in making work that really corresponds to what you want to do. And I think that, you know, that people should see that. And I think that would be important for Seattle. And then another thing is just, you know, there's always talk about LA and New York being these big art world hubs. And then there's always like, oh, well, Seattle's also there, but a little bit outside of it. And so it's really good that Seattle is getting this work and is the second city after, you know, New York or Brooklyn to show it. And, you know, we can be proud of that.
I was thinking about this in in juxtaposition to some of the artists who are making work right now, because this was social critique. It's 30 years ago now, which is kind of amazing to think about. But I've had a lot of conversations with younger artists, and I was thinking about this year's NETI Award-winning artist Christopher Paul Jordan, who is also working in spray paint often, thinking about his place as a young Black man in America. And I think a lot of the younger artists are really focused in this area on social equity, on social justice issues. And so I don't know that every one of them is going to make $110 million after they die on a painting at auction, nor maybe even is that their goal. But it could be an inspirational thing in terms of the work that you make and the things you have to say being put into a larger context. It also brings up a whole lot of questions in my mind, Bill, about commercial versus artistic success and mm-hmm. where they converge and whether they necessarily always have to converge. Do you have to make $110 million at Christie's to be considered the most successful artist in America?
Hmm. Final thoughts, Margo?
Yes, I read in the New York Times, and they said, you know, that this collector can inspire wealthy millennials to buy artworks. And I think that's an important thing to mention, too, because we talk a lot in Seattle about, you know, the tech collectors, if they're buying enough art. But this collector, Maezawa, who shows that there's pleasure in getting art and also showing it to people. And it doesn't have to be on his level. No, you know, not a lot of people have that money, but there's pleasure in it and sharing it as well. And I think that's important, too.
Margo von Singel, visual arts critic for City Arts, talking with me and Marcy Silman about the most expensive American artwork ever sold, an untitled painting by Jean-Michel Basquiat that you can see at the Seattle Art Museum from March 21st to August 13th. I really enjoyed this. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The Record, Margo. On KUOW Seattle.